It's time for Fantasy Baseball Dynasty Style. The Dynasty Baseball Show is your home for prospect analysis, farm system reviews, keeper leagues, and more, starring Ron Rigney, Brian Vaughn, and, well, me, your host, Van Lee. Welcome, everyone, to the Dynasty Baseball Show. I'm Van Lee, your host, and it is the February 2nd, 2022 edition of the show. We'll be covering the LA Angels and Houston Astros on today's episode. But it's not just me. I'm joined by Ron Rigney. Let's do that again. I like the rhyme. How are you, Ron?
I'm okay. It is February 2nd, and I'm here to tell you, despite what Punxsutawney Phil did, the frozen iguana down here did see his shadow. So I'm not exactly sure what that means for us in Florida, but he saw the shadow.
It's quite ominous. I don't know exactly what it is, but it is an ominous display there. Brian Vaughn, what do you think of the other groundhog who apparently just decided rather than even bother looking at his shadow or not, he just thought I'd die on the eve of, what is this, Groundhog's Day? I couldn't even remember the name of it.
It's I think it's pretty appropriate. I mean, to the times we live in, to just go ahead and bow out rather than face another season, really, of any kind. Here in Missouri, Ron, we are facing a potential snowstorm.
Yes.
It hasn't snowed at all, but it is icy, very icy. And you have frozen iguanas. So we live in solidarity. We are living our best Nate Dawkins lives at this point. All right, let's get into this stuff today, gentlemen. We are, of course, part of the Butu Inc. podcast network. You can check out the other shows on the network, including The Nasty Cast, our sister podcast, where we talk redraft, and we'll be discussing the shortstop position this week, as well as The Launch Angle podcast, which is a high-stakes fantasy podcast starring myself, Rob Silver, and Jeff Zimmerman. And we are having Jared Cross, who is a he works for Fangraphs. He does a lot of the projections there as a guest this week, so that'll be a fun interview. And then in the coming weeks, at some point, we're talking to a guy named Phil Dussault, who is the winningest player in high-stakes fantasy leagues last year. So it'll be interesting to see what he has to say, so definitely check that out. And, of course, the Boob Tube Boys is our comedy show where we discuss television programs, and we are right smack in the middle of Bones Weeks. So if you like Bones,
oh,
that
man,
show
talk about high stakes.
Ooh, yeah. Oh, and by the time, no, I guess that won't come out yet, but next week's Bones episode, very high stakes.
Oh, so, the stakes don't even get any higher. A little sneak peek. Angel plays poker.
I think that was the episode description for that Bones episode for sure. All right. And you can find us on Twitter at Manly Van Lee, at Loud Guitar Brian, at The Real Made, M-A-D-A-Y for Ron, and at Butu Dynasty. Check us out. So let's get into it. We're going to discuss two systems this week, and we're going to do that occasionally as we go throughout the offseason if we come across minor league systems that are bad, and we have two minor league systems that are quite bad on today's show. It's my Angels, and then, of course, we're combining them with the Houston Astros, who might be the worst team in baseball as farm system goes for a couple of reasons. We can get into that later. We'll do that over the coming weeks, as long as we get these bad systems, so that way we can make sure we have all these out in time for actual baseball, which may or may not happen on time.
Who knows?
So let's get into it. As far as systems go, the Angels are bad, maybe not the worst, but I think they're certainly bottom third as far as farm system rankings go. What do you think, Brian, about this farm system as a whole? Is this an improvement over, 5 years ago when the Angels had nothing, or is this just more old hat with the Angels being unable to develop prospects?
This is a lot more like that time period to me, but not for nothing, they've cleaned out their farm system a bit in terms of adding depth to the major league roster. We don't know how those players are going to turn out yet, necessarily. Brandon Marsh and Joe Adell, chief among them. But it's not like in the past 5 years they haven't brought anyone up. So I think things are improving, but this is kind of another low point, other than a couple pitchers up top. And I'd like to quickly note, pitching seems to be a focus, and we've mentioned it on the show before, but the Angels drafted only pitchers last year.
In an entire
amateur draft. So there's definitely, that's one of those situations where they're making some sort of statement, but I'm not sure what it is, and that does not leave me encouraged about where things are headed.
Yeah, it's still odd to hear that that a team went with that strategy and drafted nothing but pitchers, and it's definitely a need part of the major league roster. Vin, you can attest to that. So it's definitely one of the bottom systems. But Brian, like you said, it's a result of they've called some of these guys up and they're willing to let them stay there and kind of figure the game out, which is, you know, what we advocate for in fantasy when we have these guys on our dynasty teams. And, you know, the guys that I covered, there's a couple that have a little bit of promise, but it's kind of bleak as far as when you're looking at what they have down the line. There's not a lot of guys that I think are ready to contribute right now, and there's just not a lot of impact type players on here. But yet again, when you call up guys like you said with Marsh and Adele, those are definitely two of the top guys, you know, top guys in all of baseball as far as prospects when they were in the minors. So I think you'll see them get back to that point. A couple of guys to get excited about, but it's going to be a while before we hear any noise out of these guys.
Yeah, for sure. And it's literally like some executive in the Angels front office said, man, we are light on pitching. We just don't have anything. So maybe we should look at taking another starter, maybe in the first one or two rounds. And then whoever's in charge of their drafting went, okay, 20 starters. Sure, let's do that. Okay, I'm game.
A problem, and that's exactly what they did. They're in a situation, too, where they need to be focused on kind of a win-now mode in Mike Trout's prime.
Mm-hmm. And Ohtani being young and all.
Yeah,
and so
exactly. And starting his prime kind of age-wise, at least. And it's kind of discouraging to see them take that kind of approach and continue to show that they haven't found a way to add to the pitching on the major league roster now. Like, that's not been something they've ever figured out how to do.
No, it's not like Oakland or the Giants where they can take one of these 35-year-old guys who's had a career of mediocrity and make them usable. That just has not happened. I mean, Cobb pitched for them last year, and he was largely bad for the Angels until the Angels were out of it, and then they kind of straightened him out. And now Cobb is a nice piece for the San Francisco Giants. So,
yeah,
it's kind of gross looking at. Now, that said, they've also missed on a couple of the big names. Jordan Adams just simply hasn't been able to hit to this point. And there's still a lot of potential in that bat, and I'm not ready to give up on that, certainly. But he's no longer the number two prospect in this system. He's the number six or whatever we have him. So on that note, I'll mention that I took these rankings from Prospects 1500. So you can check out their list. They have the top 50 Angels prospects, and they have finished every single farm system. So largely from here on out, this is who I will be using as far as gathering the numbers, because as like we say every week, this is just an excuse to talk to these players. So don't get too hung up on where they're at in the list. So on that note, let's start with the first guy. It's Reed Detmers. In the late 2010s, the Angels had a good run in first-year player drafts. They were taking high-ceiling, super-athletic prep players like Jordan Adams and Joe Adele, of course, but they did shift focus quite a bit starting in 2020, and that's if you ignore the 2019, I guess we'll call it fiasco, where they drafted Will Wilson as their first-round pick and then immediately traded him to the Giants for salary relief from Zach Cozart. That was the whole thing. Anyway, that's the year that they took Reed Detmers with the 10th overall pick. And of course, last year they took Sam Bachman as well, alongside the 800 other pitchers and no offensive players. So really, those last couple of years, pure pitching centric. Now, whether or not that ends up being a smart move will not be apparent for a few years. But right now, at least Detmers looks like a good call for a team desperate for major league pitching. He was taken out of the University of Louisville, and he is a starting pitcher standing 6'2", 210 pounds. And although he doesn't really have raw velocity or an extremely deep repertoire to become like a true ace kind of pitcher, there is still potential number two upside here. More likely outcome is he's a mid-rotation starter. For his repertoire, Detmer has a low 90s fastball that he commands at an above average rate and occasionally dials up into the mid 90s. Against lefties, the pitch does get a little more run as a cutter kind of adjacent pitch, and he's comfortable working up in the zone with it, which allows his secondary stuff to play up that much more. Now, speaking of the secondaries, he does have a curveball that's a true 70-grade pitch, thanks to a big bend and great control. The one knock on the pitch is that it does sit in the low 70s, and sometimes that's just a little too slow for major league hitters to miss. So I think he'll either need to continue pitching up with the fastball in the zone to throw people off with the big looping curveball, or maybe add some velocity to hit or something. But overall, there is a recipe for success here. He also throws a changeup that's essentially middling as of right now, but has been a big focus of his development. He tends to command that pitch well. It just needs a little more movement or consistency to become at least an average pitch, which could elevate his game to what it could be. And finally, we've also seen him toy with a different look to his breaking pitch with a slider that sits in the mid-80s. And the pitch performed actually quite well last year, despite it being a new addition to the repertoire. So Detmers did, like I kind of mentioned, get a taste of the majors last year for the Angels. And while the results weren't exactly pretty, he had a 7.40 ERA, 8.27 K per nine, and 4.79 walks per nine. Oh, and a 2.18 home run per nine, which is not good. We did actually see a lot of people kind of ignore that, which I think is the right thing to do, because he just simply wasn't ready for the majors. He was brought up really, really young into his career. So a lot of scouts are tossing that out. So I think you're making a mistake if you just look at what he did last year and think, okay, he's not going to be very good. Overall, the most important thing I see out of Detmers in the majors last year was the development of that slider and the refinement of his pitch mix. The new slider performed fairly well. Opponents hit just 235 against it, which is compared to 375 against the fastball, and an amazing 150 against the curveball. It's a good pitch. But as you saw, the fastball is not performing well overall. He was already only throwing the fastball 40% of the time, so I don't think he can really cut usage of it anymore. You have to be right around that slot to be successful. So I think he either needs to get the location and spotting down or improve velocity or spin. But considering his good command throughout his career, I do expect to see that happen sooner rather than later. Now, there's a pretty good chance he starts the year in the minors this year, depending on the CBA rules, but I would expect to see him make his way back to the major league rotation by midseason at least this year. And again, maybe he's not a true ace, but I think he's about as solid of a mid-rotation starter as you can find with a fairly high floor. The ceiling isn't super high, but the floor isn't super low either. So it's kind of a pitcher that is perfect for what the Angels need if it pans out to this, but in fantasy, maybe not as exciting. And I think that's a kind of a buying opportunity. I'd be curious to see the fantasy consensus on him. And I think if you can reach out and get him, and if the owner is a little upset with what he saw in the majors last year, then maybe you can get him for a reasonable cost.
I think so for sure. He's one of those guys who, I think any pitcher whose age, who has shown improvement like he has, and then struggles a little bit when he first hits the majors, I think that's almost always a good buy opportunity.
For sure. And he only had, 62 innings in the minor leagues. He'd only pitched this year in professional baseball. So that's essentially being just thrown into the majors. So
yeah, and getting and performing well enough to get there that quickly says something positive.
Exactly. All right. Again, that was Reed Detmers here at number one. Number two, we have another pitcher on this list. It's Sam Bachman, a player I just mentioned. Brian, is he part of Bachman Turner Overdrive or not?
Well, I looked into it, and according to my research, too young.
Oh. But he does take care of business. Let's go ahead and get that out there, yeah, all right?
He does take care of business, and that's why he was a first-round pick last year for the Angels, is Bachman's been taking care of business. He really did in college. His velocity went up quite a bit between his freshman and senior year, and the result is now he can hit 100 with his fastball. He's got a little bit of an unusual arm slot, and he already had a solid slider. That makes it play up more. So that's what we're looking at with Bachman. Before I get into the negatives, he has a very big fastball now, and he has a wipeout slider. He's going to get strikeouts. The problem is, will he do that as a starter or as a reliever? And it's kind of impossible to tell right now. He's only logged 14 innings in high A since being drafted, and we've got big control and command problems here. He really needs a third pitch, an off-speed that he can rely on, with the fastball and slider, or else someone can just sit on one of them, no matter how good they are. Or he can be in the bullpen where then none of what I just said matters, and he can just strike out a bunch of guys in the eighth or ninth inning. And I could see where it would be advantageous for the Angels to take a college pitcher like that if they're looking to compete soon, which would be difficult this year unless they're planning on doing something once action resumes. But rush him kind of up there and to take a bullpen role and then work him into starting, something like that, if they think he can help the team without having to pay another reliever. So I don't know. He's a guy to look out for, because at 22, if he starts out well and they make a tweak where he's throwing more strikes, he could really rise pretty quickly. Or they could commit to him being a starter and kind of work on a third pitch for longer. Either way, there's potential here. How much depends on whether he's a starter or a reliever.
And I do think, I'm glad you brought that up, that there is a pretty good chance that we see him make it to the majors as a reliever. and they toy around with him in that role for a bit just to get some experience. And then he goes back to the minors at the end of whatever year that is, be it this year or next year, works as a starter for a bit, and eventually we see him as a starter. I think that could very much be a viable path. That is
more now than ever.
Yeah, and let me just ask you guys, how do you feel about teams doing that? Do you think that that might be detrimental to them as a starting pitcher, or are we seeing so many guys shuffle back and forth between relief and starting that it's okay? It's simply as you manage their workload. That's more important.
I think it's an interesting way to go. I think it's probably smart as far as introducing pitchers to a smaller major league workload first, but I mean, time will tell. I think getting them a sample and making sure that they're ready for it is probably better, though. Even though, you know, when you're playing fantasy, it's annoying. I just think practically, and that's kind of what we're seeing in baseball, a lot of systematic changes like that to how players are used, that when you play fantasy, it's super annoying, but you can see the practical reason.
And not to say that, you know, these guys, when they come in relief in that scenario, they don't come in some key situations, but I think it can be managed a little bit better, you know, as opposed to having that, you know, that pressure behind you coming out and being the guy that starts. It's your major league debut. A guy that I think about that it worked well, even though it was under, you know, a huge microscope on the biggest stage, is David Price. When we think about David Price, it's something where, you know, he came up and he made some relief appearances in the playoffs before he even started and was a piece of that bullpen down the stretch. So I think that benefited him definitely. And I think it's a nice way to kind of start managing those innings, get their feet wet a little bit, not necessarily keeping them down at AAA and getting that major league exposure.
Yeah, and I mean, even dating back to around that same time, Adam Wainwright did the same thing. He was closing games before he was starting them. And so it's like, it's a process that's been going on for quite a while now. But I think it, for some reason, has picked up a lot more steam again in the last couple of years, it seems like. And Ron, well, you would know for sure, the Rays are pretty much willing to use pitchers however, so.
By the way, the phrase of he's closing games before he was starting them sounds like something a sports anchor would say on PTI or whatever, and they're like, man, he's so good, he's closing those games before he's even starting them.
When the actual connotation is that that was like learning to walk before you run.
Let's just say when it comes to Sam Bachman, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Oh, my.
This is another PTO. Yeah. Reference there, let's
get this over to Ron and let's talk about another player.
I think I just need to finally say he needs to take that fastball and let it ride. Okay, I'm out of BTO references. I'm done. I have no
you
more.
Beat me by one. That's I would have gotten the first two only.
All right, it is time to toss it to Ron. We're looking at the number three prospect in this system, Kyren Paris. Cool name, fast guy. Tell us how good he could be, Ron.
I don't know how good he could be. And you know, it's one of these things when you're at the third guy in the system, you want to be optimistic, you want to be excited about it. And I'm just not all that excited about it. So it kind of speaks to what we're dealing with here. So Kyren Paris, second round pick in 2019, a shortstop middle infielder, kind of on the smallish side, 6'1", 175, was drafted right out of high school. And, you know, like I said, there's not a ton, at least from a fantasy standpoint, I don't think to get super excited about. You know, we talked about Adele getting called up and the guys like Detmers, there's quite a big drop off after them. And he does a lot. He's good at a lot of things, but I don't feel like he's great at any one thing. And I don't know how that's going to translate to fantasy production. I think he's going to be a better real life player. And I think that's a phrase that you're going to, at least for my guys, you're going to hear me use that quite a bit within this couple of systems that we're covering tonight. So last check, Kyren Paris weighed in at 165. Since he spent some time at the alt site, the scouts and the team is kind of speculating. He's put some size on, so that they speculate that he's all the way up to 180, which from 165 is a pretty big increase. And they were impressed with the improvement in the pop that he showed at the alt site off of some of the better minor league pitchers in the system. And when you look at his overall body of work, as far as in the minors from 2021, it looks impressive, but when you look at that promotion to high A, it slows down a little bit. And scouts don't believe that there's a ton of power in there, so he's going to have to be one of these guys that his speed and his ability to hit through the gaps at doubles is going to get him on base. But the one thing that stands out is that K rate is so high. And when you look at it between A and high A, it went from 30 to 36%. Now, I know that the high A sample size was a little on the small side, but you know, walking at a 19% clip like he did at A with a 30% K rate. It eats into it a little bit, but that's going to catch up with him at some point, I believe, where we saw, even though it was only 55 plate appearances, we only saw him walk 44% of the time in high A. So it's something where he's going to have to figure out how to cut the Ks down and get on base. He's going to have to make sure he keeps that walk rate up. He is going to be able to use that speed a little bit. But defensively, he's a middle, second base, shortstop type guy. The organization believes he can stay at shortstop, that he's athletic enough. So we'll see how that pans out. But he is a guy that can play either position well. I think at best he kind of ends up being maybe a deeper league fantasy guy if he ends up being an everyday player. But he's one to watch, especially if he does get that promotion to Double A, which I look for him to get at some point in this season. He is just still 20 years old, so like a couple of the guys I'm going to cover, there's no rush to get him up to the majors, but a guy that I just don't really see a whole lot of fantasy production out of.
His path to fantasy production is he manages to put the bat on the ball enough that he gets on base enough, which he can take a walk, like you mentioned, that he can steal a bunch of bases. That's really the best outcome that you could see for him, because even though they've said that he's added power, it has not shown up in the minors. And I just don't buy it. He doesn't have a swing tailored for that. So I don't think you're getting a well-rounded player here. You're getting a speed threat that might eventually get you some stolen bases. The problem is he's not like Vidal Brujan, who could get you 40 stolen bases. Paris is fast, but on the base pass, it just has not panned out to that degree. Although he doesn't get caught as much, he just simply doesn't run as much as someone with his speed might. So that's, I think,
and he doesn't have the, like Brujan, he doesn't have the hit tool to where know he's going to be on base. Like, there's a floor to what his OBP will be as well.
Sure, yeah. So let's move on to the number four player on this list. That was Kyren Paris at three. It's Errol Vera. And now let's go ahead and set the scene here, guys. It's late at night. You just got home from your book club. You're reading the newest John Grisham Fair, and you are famished. You're so
this
hungry.
Is exactly where I would have gone with this, I think.
Exactly. So Carol, of course, was running late to the book club. She didn't bring her famous goulash. That's disappointing. All you had to eat at the party were stale Triscuits and easy cheese, because the club met at David's house this month. And as you know, he clearly can't cook to save his life. So you toss a pot on the stove. You start heating some water. You're going to make some pasta. You're still reeling about Beth's take on the character's motivation. So you're a little bit distracted. You accidentally reach across the stove and damn it, that's hot. You've burned your wrists on the hot pot. It's not too bad. It just clearly stings. You know what you do? You just rub some Errol Vera right on there. You'll feel better in no time. It helps just on the burn. Perfect.
Straight off the plant. Just peel it back and put it on there.
Yep. You just break it in half. Real gooey. Spreads all over your hand.
You can see why the Angels would wind up with Errol Vera in their system when Mike Trout starts getting hurt. Because you just apply them. And then probably Trout's fine. Apply some Errol Vera.
Okay, now Vera was an international signee by the Angels in the 2019 international free agent period out of Venezuela as a 17-year-old switch-hitting shortstop. He is at present not really a good fantasy prospect, but as with a lot of international players, what you're buying into is the potential. Good news is he's solid as anyone can be as a switch hitter, meaning he's likely to keep doing that. And really, when I was looking up Vera here and thinking about it, there just aren't any switch hitters. I can't think but of maybe like one or two off the top of my head, whereas in the past, it felt like there'd be 10 in the league. It's just weird. You don't see it much anymore. But he arguably will be able to maintain the switch hitting. He is very consistent regardless of which side of the plate he is swinging from. And between the two, he does seem to be more comfortable batting right-handed. But again, that doesn't seem to be an issue either way. And I do think he'll continue to develop that way. Vera is listed at 6'2" and quite gangly. And defensively, he plays well at shortstop and could continue one of two ways. The first way is he doesn't gain a ton of weight or muscle, and he continues being able to handle shortstop. The second is he puts on a bit of weight and muscle and winds up shifting to third base eventually. Either way, I think he'll at the very least remain at a demanding position defensively, carried mostly by his strong arm. On the negative side of things, he doesn't really have any power right now and doesn't project to gain any unless he puts on that weight and muscle. If he can, perhaps he can parlay his good bat speed into some over-the-fence power, but I'm a little bit skeptical at this point. I said earlier he's very consistent from both sides of the plate, but that's not all good news. He has good bat speed, but he tends to have a lot of trouble catching up to velocity. And in this day and age, that is one thing you simply cannot struggle with. If you want to be a good hitter, you cannot miss fastballs. You have to be able to do that because every pitcher in the world is throwing 110 miles per hour now, and you just have to be able to hit that. Neither negative nor positive to this is his speed grade. He hovers around 50, but that's also defensive speed and getting down the line speed. So I don't think he's really going to be much of a base stealer and likely just never will be or never pan out to that. Honestly, I think for him to become a good fantasy asset, he absolutely needs to bulk up. If he remains small enough to be a shortstop, he'll always have more real life value than fantasy. So as a fantasy owner, I think you want him to fatten up a bit, add some power, and then maybe he can be a mid-tier corner infielder with some upside. But maybe it's just because this is my system, my favorite team, and I've seen how they handle players like this. Roberto Baldaquin was a big-time international prospect who is out of baseball. I didn't even know if he's in like the lowest levels of the minors anymore because they couldn't do anything with his, I guess, potential. So I'm skeptical. That said, a lot of scouts do like him. And as far as this list goes, I think Vera is one that sometimes he's second on this list, sometimes he's eighth. He has a very wide range of outcomes as far as what scouts and analysts think. Okay, that was Errol Vera at four. Number five, cool name, yeah. Denzer Guzman, Brian, the Bull Denzer himself. Tell us about
yeah,
him.
Yeah, it's great. Denzer, such a cool name.
What was the name of the Rick Moranis and Sigourney Weaver in Ghostbusters? You know, one of them was like Dozer. The Almighty when they were possessed, and then Rick Moranis was the key master. That's what I think of when I hear his name.
Yeah, see, well, I had the difficulty I had all week was looking at it and continually wanting to say either Denzel or Denver. Mm-hmm. One of the two. One of the two.
Just mushed together. This is John Denver and Denzel Washington mashed into a baseball machine.
You can't get a better baseball player than you can from doing that, I wouldn't imagine. Well, he is a J2 guy from last year, so very young, not 18 yet even. Lot to learn, but scouts are very optimistic about that. He's an athletic middle infielder. He played a little bit of DSL time. That's all he's done as a pro. So we don't have a lot to go on. He's one of these types of players who were just going on kind of a lot of quotes saying things like super athletic, good feel for the game. We expect him to learn quickly, things like that. Because we don't have a lot of statistical evidence, and because he's so young that there's a lot of projection. He's 6'2", but he's listed at 165, for instance. So if he adds a little bit of weight, that could move him off short. It could also mean he gains a little bit of power. But right now, the best case outcome we can see is some sort of a utility infielder type who does a little bit of everything, probably not too fantasy relevant, but again, at his age, 1 year can make a huge difference in terms of development. So pretty much too early to say.
Yeah, definitely a little too young to figure that out entirely. Well, let's go ahead and take a quick break here. Then we get back, we'll finish up the Angel system and move on to the Astros.
Barbra Streisand.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Van Lee alongside Ron Rigney and Brian Vaughn, and we're talking Angels prospects. We are on to the number six Angels prospect, another guy who there's a lot of potential here. I think certainly, and maybe not certainly, but more potential in his bat than maybe anyone in this system if it pans out, but it sure hasn't panned out to this point. It's Jordan Adams, and Ron, you're going to tell us about Adams.
Another one of these guys that is super, super athletic, but trying to learn the game of baseball solely after being a guy that's excelled at many different sports. And, you know, you referenced him a little bit ago, Van, and, you know, great athlete here, 80 grade speed, 6'2", 180 outfielder, former first round pick in 2018, a guy that we might see a little bit of this year, depending upon, you know, what he decides to do with the bat. And if he decides to figure it out, a lot of scouts believe, you know, with the speed, he's not really going to be an issue in the field. You know, that speed's going to allow him to track down a lot of balls. And from what I've read, he's gotten a lot better at doing that. It's just, we need that bat to catch up. So like I said, a very, very raw athlete, some of the best tools that you're going to see, not just in this system, but in all of baseball, some of the best physical tools. Just can't, hit very well just yet. And that's obviously, as we know, a big part of it. The K rate has climbed at every level. When you look at his Fangraphs page, you know, you see it start out as kind of a modest 17.5%, and then it climbs all the way to his biggest sample size, which was in high A last season. And in 307 plate appearances, struck out nearly 38% of the time.
A little much.
Yeah, that's not real good, and especially at that lower level. And 9% walk rate didn't really cut into it like we'd like to see. So it translated to a 217, 290, 310 slash. Not what we're looking for out of an athletic toolsy prospect. Despite all that, he was still somehow, some way able to swipe 18 bags. But like I said, that unimpressive slash is going to hold him back, and it has held him back. Plus defender, like I said, just, you know, a lot of speed, being able to track down things in the outfield, so that's not a question. I feel like he's kind of stalled out at the A level, so it'll be interesting to see if he is able to make that promotion to double A. Yet again, another super young guy, 21 years old, but just needs to be able to put that athletic ability together with the ability to get on base and make contact at the plate, make meaningful contact at the plate, not strike out or home run every time. So there's time will tell. Like you said, Van, I don't think there's any reason to give up on him just yet. They don't really have a need for him there. Fortunately, this is a pretty deep position, as we know, for them. So they can give him some time to figure it out, but is a little bit old for the level. You know, like I said, high A, he is 22. I would assume he would probably start at high A again. But I think we could definitely see a double A promotion at some point in 2022. But it's hard to say, just because he has spent, you know, 2019 and 2021 both at the high A level. He got a small sample size there. I think he starts there. Just a guy that I'm really not sure what the outcome becomes. You hope for the best, but I really have my doubts at this point.
On the positive side of things, those 18 stolen bases only came with 4 caught stealings. His speed is legit. As for fantasy purposes, he will be a base stealer if he can hit enough to be able to get on base and play for the major leagues. And another optimistic take would be that even though he's a latecomer to baseball, essentially, he played a lot of football, that he's walked an awful lot in the minor leagues, about 10%. And traditionally, you don't see that. Usually with these super toolsy raw players, they start out swinging at everything, and he largely does swing at everything, but he still manages to take quite a few walks. So that's maybe something to hang on to. But overall, it has been a little bit disappointing. He's a hacker. He's a free swinger, 37% strikeout rate last year. Hopefully he can get all that under wraps and really get to his talent level, but it hasn't been good so far. So there we go. That sums up the Angels' top 6 prospects. Now keep in mind, we will continue doing a few more Angels prospects on the bonus show available on patreon.com/BootuInc, BOOTU. For just $2 a month or more, you get access to all of our bonus content, and you'll get to hear extra prospects each week when we do this. So we just did the top 6 on this show. Next 3 of the Angel system on that bonus show, we're going to do the top 6 Astros on this show, and the next 3 Astros on that bonus show as well. So definitely go check that out, subscribe. You'll get all kinds of cool content there. But let's get into the Astros. First, before we talk the individual players, this is largely regarded as one of the worst, if not the worst, system in baseball. Brian, is that as damning as it sounds, or is there still some hope to be found in this system?
Yeah, it's not very good. I mean, in terms of, well, like, guys likely to hit a very high ceiling, or really guys you can project as kind of major league regulars. It's a little bit rough, but kind of like the Angels, they have promoted guys over the past few years. And they also have, you know, a really good major league team right now. So anytime that happens, you're going to tend to have less in the farm system because you had to get there somehow. But yeah, right now it does look pretty rough. One of the guys I'll be talking about very well might be a starter for them this year, but it's not as exciting as you might think.
Yeah, it's definitely down towards the bottom. And I mean, I will give them a little bit of credit for what they've been able to add to the system with the you know, the penalties and things that they've dealt with. Because there are a few guys, at least that I covered, that I think you have to have a little bit of hope for. And I think we've learned, you know, one of the things that the Astros have done a really good job with as of lately is coming up with back-end starters that are out of nowhere that actually are successful. And they're not fantasy aces, but they're guys that are serviceable if you need a streamer or – you know, guys at the back end of your fantasy rotation that you can count on. So I've kind of learned my lesson there with writing some of these guys off, and I'll cover one that's not too terrible as far as when we look at prospects. But yeah, there's definitely not a lot to get excited about in the minor leagues if you're an Astros fan.
It's a little top heavy here. I think the first two might be in a tier, a division of their own, and then it steps down from there. But overall, I also think the first two might be a little bit overrated, or certainly the first one, who I'll get into right now. It's Pedro León. And León was the Astros' big get in the 2020-2021 international free agency period. And the Cuban shortstop slash center fielder was scooped up for a nice $4 million as the prize of the period. Everyone agrees that he's a five-tool player. We all know that. He can do all things at least reasonably well and contribute in every facet of the game. But scouts and analysts heavily disagree on just how good his potential overall can be. León is 23 years old now, and he's largely good to go, but he might not see the majors until late this season, considering a few things I'll get into here shortly. As far as the hit tool goes, this is probably the tool with the most questions attached to it. It's like if the Riddler was really attached to just one big wrench, that's what the hit tool would be. The future grade is guessed at being anywhere from 40 to 55, but currently is playing like a 30 grade. In 2021, he saw action at three levels, including the Complex League for a spell, AA, and finally AAA. And across the three levels, he slashed just 220, 339, 369, and 301 plate appearances. Obviously, a 369 slugging percentage doesn't really point to any power. He did hit 9 home runs, but clearly couldn't hit anything other than singles or homers that year. He will hit for power, I think, eventually, in my opinion. And while it might not be 30-plus home runs annually, I think he could certainly top 20 a couple of times in his career, 15 to 20 more often than not. And León did steal 18 bases last year, although he was caught 10 times, which is not at all a good ratio. His 60 grade speed says he should still manage to settle in as someone who could nab double digit steals every year, however, and I think the chance for 20 plus annually is there if he learns to read pitchers a little bit better. Finally, defensively, he's quite good, although not elite. He plays both shortstop really well and center field really well, and this versatility is a huge boon to the Astros team. That is a bottom barrel system, of course. If the team decides to re-sign Carlos Correa, and I just don't think that's going to happen, or maybe this next player, the number two prospect on the list, becomes the starting shortstop, then I think you can just plug León in the center field and he wouldn't lose a step. He'd be great out there. So on one hand, he's considered an elite prospect talent with all five tools. On the other hand, we see that he was really, really bad last year. In addition to his slash line from earlier, he also struck out over 30% of the time, and he really doesn't portend to be someone who is a plus in batting average at any point. That said, he walked a ton. Clearly, he has a good eye, so I think he'll always maintain a good OBP, which could keep him at the top of the lineup even when he is struggling. And I had grown to actually really like León and thought I would be the high man on him, but for some reason, people have really hitched their wagon to him as a player, and I think ultimately are making him out to be far better than what he actually is. I think 250, 350, 450 with 15 homers and 20 stolen bases is what could happen with León, and that is certainly crazy valuable. It's very good, but I think other people out there are really seeing 300, 370, 500 with 25 homers and 35 stolen bases, and I just do not see a path to that happening. If the León owner in your league is down on him after the bad season last year, I think you can totally buy him here for a little bit of a cheaper cost. But if the owner is, like I said earlier, expecting the moon, and I just mentioned, there's no way you can really trade him for a reasonable cost. So really just depends on your league and the player. There is some upside here, certainly, but also maybe it's capped a bit by the fact that he has struck out so much, even at lower levels, and was a little bit older of a prospect. But we'll see. All right, that was Pedro León. Next up, the number two prospect on the list is Jeremy Peña. And Brian, he might be a name you need to pay attention to in redraft leagues this year. Tell us about his skill set.
I really think so. I don't think Carlos Correa is obviously going to be there, and I don't think that there's going to be another option the Astros are willing to pay. They've developed Peña. He was really a glove-first guy when he first came up through the system. He's 24 now. He's made it to AAA. And he's worked on a lot of things. He's done fantasy relevant stuff in the past as well, too. In 2019, he made his A-ball debut, stole 17 bases, walked at a 12% rate. And last year, he actually hit 10 homers, slugged 598. I say all that to say I don't know that that's really his skill set. We saw last year as he moved up levels, his underlying numbers kind of started to fall apart. He walked at a 4% rate, struck out at 26%. That's kind of almost Mondesi territory. Not quite, but still. The good news is Peña is going to have time to figure it out because he is a very good defensive shortstop. He has a solid arm. He's quick. He probably will steal bases to the extent that he gets on base and that the Astros let him, because they've not really been letting guys we associate with stolen bases run a whole lot. Altuve, Bregman, guys like that. So it is kind of, and Correa before that. So it is kind of a question mark whether he'll run a whole lot when he's actually playing for Houston. But I do expect him to get that experience this year. So we'll see what he does. I don't think he's a guy who is going to have a big ceiling. I think he's maybe hope for some 10-10 type years out of him.
And that is to say that there's fantasy value to be found there. Particularly, I looked it up. He's going with like pick 450 in redraft leagues this year. Mm-hmm. So if you do believe he will be on the team, and it seems like you and I are in agreement there,
yeah, Brian, that's fair.
That's great. That's a great pickup. Somebody you can slap in there if you have injury problems or whatever. And then for his career, he's going to do what he does. He's going to steal some bases. He's going to hit for some power and overall won't kill you in any category. So that's certainly valuable. Okay, Jeremy Peña at two. Corey Lee is our third prospect on this list, and that's Corey with a K. Tell us about him, Ron.
Yeah, well, you know our fondness for catching prospects on the show, mm-hmm. and especially we're doubly fond of them when they're this high on the list. Even some lists you look at, this guy is listed as the number one guy in the system. I saw him on a couple of lists as low as number 10 in the system. So a lot of range of outcomes here with Corey Lee. Former first-round pick, a lot of scouts, a lot of systems, or a lot of organizations had him a few rounds lower than that, so it's kind of a surprise when they picked him at 32. But it's definitely something I feel like that the Astros have not had. I couldn't think of the last time they had a homegrown catcher really pan out and be that guy behind the plate. It seems like it's been a lot of journeyman type guys and a lot of light hitting type players there. So Corey Lee could be the first to kind of buck that trend and be kind of a homegrown, you know, from the start guy there. So in AAA, definitely as far as the power, you know, he showed that a little bit, but it's you know, it's just all about when we talk about these catching prospects, are they going to stay at the position? And in AAA, showed a little bit of the promise that we're looking for there, but we just haven't really seen him tap into that, you know, like we thought we would. You know, AA, we saw 8 homers and 203 plate appearances. He's not going to be an OBP, I don't think, a good OBP guy or a very good batting average guy. I think he's going to kind of be that prototypical 20 to 25 homer, 250, 320 type catcher on the high end, which you could do a lot worse trying to fill your catching spot with somebody, you know, that's not going to give you that. The pop makes him valuable there, like I said. Actually didn't start catching until full-time in 2019, was actually a teammate of Andrew Vaughn's in college, has played both corner infield spots, so he has experience there, and he DH'd a little bit as well. Obviously, the Astros drafted him to catch, and they're hoping that he sticks there. They're hoping they can bring him up and have him be that guy, be their backstop for many years to come. And he's definitely improved from all reports by leaps and bounds since he's been in the system, but I still don't feel like he's a lock to stay there. And it's a guy that if he improves enough, it could be somebody that there's an outside shot of that we see this season. You know, like I said, he did get promoted to AAA. He obviously will start there because, you know, like I said, his slash was 229, 263, 343. So I kind of misspoke when I said that we saw some good things out of him at AAA. We definitely did not. So we'll have to see him start there and kind of see what he becomes. A lot of the ETAs have him for 2023. I think there's a good shot that we see him next year if he puts everything together, but that's still a pretty big if. And obviously for fantasy value, if he stays a catcher, he's going to be way more valuable to us, I think, than if he ends up moving to one of the corner spots or ends up staying full-time at DH.
Yeah, played a little third base, which is maybe interesting, but it's hard to want to have a 14th overall catcher, as in catcher rankings in the major leagues, as a prospect, because there's nothing exciting about that, and who knows if he even reaches that. So I'm not really interested, but I get it if people are, you know, looking for a dart throw to see if maybe they can, you know, hit something good here. So
throwing your own brother Corey down the well.
Just a little bit. All right, next up at number 4, we have Hunter Brown. And Hunter Brown is a 23-year-old right-hand pitcher who was taken in the 2019 draft by the Astros out of Division II Wayne State College in Nebraska. So I know that sounds a little weird. Nebraska is not called Wayne. It is called Nebraska. That's the state name. Yeah, keep that in mind.
But I thought Wayne owned the whole world.
Ooh, him and Garth, is that right? I haven't watched that in so long. Dana Carvey. All right. Pick 166 overall is where he was taken in 2019. He was considered a pretty nice grab back then. And while people are plenty torn on skeptical about what kind of major leaguer he could be, it was a really nice pick, no matter what. When he was drafted, Brown relied almost solely on his big fastball, which sits in the mid-90s and touches 97, and a very fringy slider. Since then, the Astros have completely overhauled his repertoire, and he now throws a curveball as his primary secondary pitch, and it's a good potential strikeout pitch sitting in the low 90s with a big vertical drop. The slider is still here, and although it has improved, it's still not an elite pitch, but should be a good option in his arsenal. And then finally, his clear worst pitch, but one that he has, is the changeup. It's in the low 80s, very inconsistent, but it will see usage in the right situations and could perform admirably if deployed at the right time. As far as command and control goes, this is where he's not a very exciting prospect. He's clearly below average in that regard and has walked nearly 5/9 in his minor league career. The one thing a lot of scouts and analysts have had problems with in regards to Brown is pitch sequencing. I think since he completely overhauled his repertoire when signing with the Astros, this essentially caused him to start from scratch in that regard, and I do think it'll just be a matter of time before he figures the sequencing out a little bit, provided he has good coaching. Now, overall, there are two main outcomes. The first is that he figures out sequencing and reins in the command a bit, and he makes it as a good back end of the rotation starter. He's never likely going to have enough command to get better than that back into the rotation, but that doesn't mean there's not one or two seasons of maybe number three starter performance in there somewhere. The other possibility is he never improves the command. They shuttle him to the bullpen where the fastball break and pitch combo plays up. And while I think the latter is more likely, I do think he's shown enough in the last 2 years to say there's still a solid chance he could become a starting pitcher, so they will continue to develop him as such, and then we'll see from there. 23 years old, so maybe we see him later this year, possibly the year after. He's still really raw, and again, still walking way too many batters. Okay, Hunter Brown, number four. Jose Siri is number five, Brian, and this is a man who has run the gamut as far as a prospect goes.
Yeah.
He was a trendy pick a few years ago, and then everyone forgot about him because he couldn't hit, and then here he is at number five.
Well, I fear he'll be a trendy pick again because, well, let's talk about Jose Siri. That is what I'm here to do. Let's say the good things first. Last year in AAA, he hit 318, 369, 552 with 16 homers and 24 steals. That's amazing, right?
Sounds amazing. And then
he made it. Yeah, he made it all the way up to the majors. He got 49 plate appearances. He had a 956 OPS, four homers and three steals. So still blazing.
And you are definitely sticking with the positive here.
The problem is Jose Siri is like 47 years old. He's in reality, he's 26. He's also known as older than Fernando Tatis Jr. by a few years. And he's just now hitting the major leagues, and he has big holes in his game. He strikes out a ton. He's got a lot of weak spots in his swing. And that contact is the big issue. His power is not such that it outweighs those contact issues either. Or helps, you know, kind of mask his other weaknesses. However, he's very fast. He's got a good throwing arm. He can play a corner outfield position fine. And when I break it all down, an outfielder who plays fine defense, good throwing arm, little bit of power, but can't physically hit the ball fast. It sounds a lot like Adolis Garcia 2.0. Another player, kind of advanced age, who made a dent when he first got called up, but is more of probably a utility outfield type than anything else.
Boy, a 436 BABIP across 397 plate appearances. That is fascinating to see. That's a big sample size and a huge BABIP.
And so, then 400 in the majors.
Mm-hmm. So crazy, crazy. That means he hits the ball hard, certainly.
And no projection systems, by the way, like him for this year. And the majors.
As not you just pointed out, there's a big reason for that. And I think you're right. People are getting a little too crazy about him already. Okay. Jose Siri at five. Our number six prospect and the final one we'll discuss on today's show is Alex Santos. Ron, tell us about Alex Santos.
Yeah, kind of an intriguing guy, and one of those things that I could be in a year or two, that next, you know, kind of back end mid rotation kind of guy that kind of comes out of nowhere. And so in 2020, he was actually the first player they were allowed to select after the penalties from the sign stealing punishment. He was 72nd player taken overall, 6'4", 194, high school arm out of New York City. And he was a guy that, you know, he doesn't really do a ton of things that fly off the charts. And it kind of depends on where you look. There's some scouts that really like his fastball. There's some scouts that think there's a lot of work to do with it. So it grades anywhere between 45 and 55, but the velocity is there in the mid 90s. So I think there's a lot to work with there. His curve grades out as his best pitch, 55, and it's impressive on film. You know, he does look the part. You know, he is 6'4", and he has a little bit of room to project a little bit of mass on that frame as well as he grows, and he could add a little bit, you know, a few ticks to that fastball as well. But the curve is definitely the best pitch. The changeup still has a lot of work to do. As with any 19-year-old, that changeup always has work to do. But some of the best stuff, I think, actually, that is there in the system, it's just a matter of him harnessing it and controlling it. We haven't really seen a whole lot out of him. And what we have seen has been, it's been all or nothing. It's either been strikeouts or walks. When you look at what he did in Class A, 41 and two-thirds innings, he has a K per nine of 10.37, but a walks per nine of 6.48, which is an amazing number over 41 and two-thirds innings. And so the BABIP was 284, so it wasn't super, super through the roof. It's just that command and that control, like I was saying, with the fastball. You know, he's got to be able to harness that velocity. So he's still, you know, another guy in this system that's ways away, but somebody that's lower down that I think that could give you a little bit in fantasy. You just got to definitely temper the expectations out of what you get out of him because he is only 19 years old.
I have to say, I couldn't tell you the last time I saw someone with a Fangraphs command grade of 25. I haven't seen one that low in ages. I don't know if he gets better than that or not. He's going to have to if he's going to have any success. Mm-hmm. All right, before
his
we get
command
out of here,
grade is lower than Jose Siri's age,
which is a fact and fascinating. Now, before we get out of here, let's play a quick round of our favorite game, Astros Prospect. Do that again. Astros Prospect, or name that Van farted out of his head. And that's right. It's the game where I give you a name, and you two decide whether or not it's an actual Astros prospect in the system or a name that I created. You guys ready?
Okay. I'm ready.
All right. First up, let's go to Brian first on this one. Benjamin Baseball.
Yeah, that's not real.
Ron?
I do believe that's fake.
Okay, yeah, you're right. That is very fake when I did come up
I like
with that
it,
one.
Though.
I wish that were a real baseball player's name. All right. Ron, Matthew Barefoot.
I'm going to say that is an actual prospect.
Brian, I think so, too.
You are correct. That is an actual prospect. All right. Brian, back to you. Jonathan Sprinkle.
I think that is real.
I think that's Ron, real also.
You are correct. That is, in fact, a real Astros prospect. All right. Ron, Tommy Mace. As in, like, club someone with a mace or spray him in the eyes.
I'm going to say you made that up.
Brian?
Ooh, this is really tough. I'm gonna go counter Ron and try to... I'm going for the gut here. I'm going to say it's real.
Well, I'm going to give you both a point because that was a cheat. He is a real prospect, but in the Cleveland system. I just wanted to put him in here.
Oh.
And then our final one to you, Brian. Dexter Jetster. Is that a real Astros prospect or a fake one?
Well, he is something of an astronaut in a space diner. But he doesn't play for the Houston Astros, no.
Ron?
I don't believe that's real.
Yeah, you're both correct. You both win. That is not real. That is a Star Wars character.
Oh. Okay.
So there we go. That's going to do it for our round of Astros Prospect or Name Van Farted Out. All right, we covered all these systems today on today's show. And if you, again, want to hear more, we will be discussing three more prospects each on the bonus show available on patreon.com/Butu Inc. Go donate, join, and you'll get all sorts of cool content. Anything before we get out of here, guys?
Oh, I don't think so. I'm ready to talk about some more prospects that might not ever be major leaguers.
And I think that sums it up about as well as it can. But who knows? There might be a name you need to pay attention to in there.
Yeah, there always is.
So for Brian and Ron, I'm Van, and we'll catch you next time on the Dynasty Baseball Show.